Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, award-winning filmmaker and technologist, Brett Leonard.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Grand Rising. I am Mark LeJure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
We are live at Club Joyful in Venice, California. Woohoo!
Woo!
This is very exciting to be here. We've got a great show for you. We've got a great guest. We got a great band. Actually, it's the house band here at Club Joyful. So more about that when we get into it. And it's an exciting day. There's a lot of energy in the air. There's a lot of rain in the air. And it doesn't rain like this in Southern California. So something special is happening, maybe because we were going to do this tonight. And so on the way here, I had not been here before, even though we've had the pleasure of interviewing Scott Clark, and we know all about it, but happy to finally get to be here. So on the drive here, I was trying to pay attention to GPS. I was paying attention to the traffic and the rain. The windshield wipers are going 100% and a lot going on, a lot of traffic. And I know that sounds like, yeah, of course you're in LA, but it's traffic time and a lot of traffic. I was literally on the 405, the famous 405 and the 10. And at one point GPS said, somebody was trying to cut in, and I thought, did GPS say to be or not to be? The exit, I saw that there was an exit, 1B, 2B. Was it to be or not to be? That was the question. That was seriously the question in my head. And I started to laugh and I thought, okay, this is what I actually thought. Of course, I thought of Shakespeare and Hamlet, but I thought, now see, if I had an AI going at the same time that I had GPS going, which is probably AI anyway, then I could say, hey, AI, or whatever I call it. And was that to be or not to be? And then I thought, you know, that's funny, actually. If Hamlet had an AI, it could have asked the AI to be or not to be. So the point is that I don't have an AI on, and I don't know how long it'll be before I'll have an AI on everywhere I go. Now, I like the idea of all this technology. I just don't, I'm not one of the first ones to use technology. Interesting enough, our guest today is not only one of the first ones to use it, he's practically inventing it. He's inventing it before it's even invented, and he's putting it out there in the world before anybody knows what he's talking about. And people are arguing with him about it. And he's like, trust me, this is going to be a big thing. Listen to me. So we'll talk more about that in a moment. But I just had that moment where, like, that's so funny. Like, I could use technology to help me in this moment. And it's not set up yet for me. But tonight, we're going to find out how to set technology up for even more good for humanity and for storytelling experiences and fun.
Boy, that sounded like a joyful drive.
It actually was. I was coming here to do the Life Changes Show live.
I love everything about what Scott Clark and Stephen Harms and the whole team here at Club Joyful are doing. Obviously, it was a great honor to have them both as prior guests. And then the opportunity to be able to share in the launch of this incredible band, Grand Rising, is super exciting. And couldn't be more honored to have Brett Leonard with us. Mm. And that was the perfect monologue, which how many times have I said that to you? because of the overlay here of intentionality that everybody shares, the advocacy for humans, the advocacy for shared creativity, and yet we're all navigating the technology that's coming online and how to be us and how to be creative and how to, you know, benefit from the technology. It's going to be a fabulous conversation.
You know, how to be us, that's really interesting, especially considered considering some of us, myself included, for many, many years at least, didn't know how to be me without technology. And
to be us
to be or not to be me. So can technology help me be me more if I don't know who me is? Or could technology help me find me to be me?
Well, I'm going to step aside and let the expert share his opinions on this.
So excited that we have this particular expert on. Actually, just posted on Facebook, actually, because I just learned that he's considered by both the Academy of is it film directors? Oh, I don't have a note on this, but what was it? You just received 25, you're the top 25.
Oh, that was, that's Producers Guild.
Producers Guild and Variety Magazine. You're in the top 25 of most influential.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, you mean, okay, all right.
I don't really take that stuff that seriously.
We'll get to your modesty later.
That's Hollywood. I'm from Ohio originally. So
we titled this episode Integrating Technology and Human Creativity for Transformative Experiences. This is our episode 868. So our interview guest is a visionary director, producer, futurist, award-winning film maker and technologist, a thought leader in virtual reality and AI, and I could literally go on and on. He is Brett Leonard. Brett, welcome to the Life Changes Show Live.
Great to be here on this rainy night.
Yeah, you had to drive it too.
I did.
Did you take exit 2B?
I love it. I love it when it rains here. This is a desert. We need rain.
Yes.
We need water.
Yes, so. And we have it. It's great to have you here. Congratulations on all that and all the other awards. And I had the good fortune of having gotten to interview you once before, actually. And I saw an interview recently.
Yeah.
Of you in, I think it was, I'm not used to this. I'm live, so I'm looking. I want to look at you and talk to you, and then my notes are here, and I'm normally just.
That's okay. Go for it.
I know. I want to look at you, but I think it was 1999. It was 25 years ago. It was 25 years ago, and somebody asked you. Now I have to look because my notes. It was so funny. She said, "The first question. It was Bobby Wignett?
Wigan, yes.
Wigan.
And a very famous interviewer. She has a whole archive of like interviews with everyone in the world.
And I love she had this interview with you because she literally said, I'm curious to know, have we got really into special effects, you know, computer and digital and all of that?
Right.
She said, or have we just skimmed the surface 25 years ago?
Yeah.
Now, I loved your answer. Funny thing is I thought everything you said was so spot on to today, and yet I almost feel like you could give the exact same answer today that we have only skimmed the surface.
Yeah, there is a continuum going on for sure, and technology isn't a set static thing. It's coming from us. Yeah. So this idea of artificial intelligence, we should not be using the word artificial. There's nothing artificial about it. It's coming from us. It's part of the natural world. It's like the rain that's happening out there tonight is raining on us. And we are now in a moment when this technology of AI is raining on us. It's just starting to rain. Now, the question is it going to flood? Is there going to be sluice gates that are necessary in order to navigate this new, deluge? Because it's coming from a deep inner desire of us to let our imaginations completely go free. And I believe to reflect the better angels of our nature with technology. And why do I think this? Because I think it's our choice. We're, this idea that this is an incredibly scary thing and we've told all these dystopian stories about it, that's because those are the stories we have chosen to tell. We've decided to tell those stories. We can tell different stories about this technology, and it can take us and guide us in different places. And I believe that the platonic responsibility of the storyteller, especially in a time like this with techno-mythology, is to at least give the option of a positive outcome and also tell the cautionary tale simultaneously.
So you're saying that today. How did you know to say this 25 years ago before anybody even knew what you were talking about?
I think I read every science fiction book a kid could read science between fiction. The ages of 5 and 15.
And you thought that was real?
Well, science fiction was the dreams of some very amazing minds, some very amazing writers. Ursula K. Le Guin is one that changed my life. She, created a dimensional world that was just as real as this one, and in her prose style and her really poetry, it was very prose poetry. That aspect of storytelling brought me to a different place of conceptual thinking. And it brought me there very early in my life. So I just kept wanting to conceptually think about these things like technomythology in a different way, because I had seen these incredible other minds like Ursula think that way as well.
So you also, it was Lawnmower Man?
Lawnmower Man was my first big hit movie.
So a couple things about that, but one of them is that you were telling the marketing people, you got to put virtual reality in the trailer.
Yeah, I told them they had to put the term virtual reality. Now, at that time, there wasn't virtual anything. There wasn't the idea of virtual reality, and all the producers looked at me like, you're out of your mind. You want to say a technology that nobody knows about, nobody understands. And I said, we've got to put that term in the trailer. I swear it'll draw people, because it's the future. It's something that's coming, and they'll sense that, even though they haven't heard the term. And so we got Don LaFontaine, this great, this guy that, did all of the trailers, in a world, that guy, right?
Yes.
We brought him in to wedge in the term virtual reality just inside the trailer.
Twice.
So we brought him in for just those two words. So he brought him in, he's like, virtual reality, and then we put it in. And I swear that was one of the things I think drew a very big audience to that film, because it was a new concept. It was something that was part of the newosphere, and people wanted to see something new. We're in that same moment with what can we do with AI? There's tremendous fear around it, but there's also tremendous excitement and anticipation.
Well, let's talk about the tremendous fear around it, because you talk about dystopian possibilities.
Well, we've told most of our, look, I have told my share of dystopian
and a couple others.
Stories.
Let me go on now.
Yeah, well, the thing is, though, there's a way of telling a dystopian story, or a cautionary tale, I should say. It's more like Greek cautionary tales, where you're bringing up the subject matter in a way that should be considered, meaning consider the consequences. But in the way you express that, there's this lightness to it. And so at the end of Lawnmower Man, when all the phones ring simultaneously as Cyber Job's birth cry, is that a negative thing or is that a beautiful thing?
Hmm.
Is the star child at the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is the reason I make films, because I saw that when I was 7 years old. I'm sitting there with my parents who are literally fighting through the whole thing because they don't understand the film. And there's barely any dialogue in it.
But you did.
I literally am going, that's what I'm going to do. In Toledo, Ohio. So they're like, yes, little Brady, it's fine. And when the Star Child comes in, that is one of the most transcendental moments in cinema, because does it mean something ominous or does it mean something incredibly hopeful about the evolution of humankind, the evolution of who we're becoming? You were saying, what are we going to be in the context of all of this technology? And there's all this discussion around transhumanism. Are we changing the nature of the organism itself? Are we, changing the nature? What's the nature of human love in a world in which we have all this virtual experience? Mm. These are very, very deep and important questions, but that's what we're here for, is to explore those aspects of ourselves, to define with ourselves, with all these tools, what we are. And that's why it's an exciting time, because there's so many ways to define and to explore that right now.
Actually, interesting about human love, I wasn't going to ask you this, but you say that, and within the context of AI, one could feel like they're experiencing love.
Well, you're experiencing love with yourself. It's funny,
tell me how funny.
The Woody Allen joke about masturbation, don't put it down, it's sex with somebody I love. Anyway, The idea, look, the fact that AI is a reflection, okay? It's a reflection. Large language models are basically taking all the mess, the strum and drang of humanity that's been quote-unquote online and cramming it down a funnel into this machine intelligence, which, by the way, the high-end mathematicians don't even fully understand how it works. There is something magic going on, and that's what I want to lean into. I want to lean into, let's find the magic in this. Yes, we have to. I'm not Pollyanna. We have to be incredibly careful. There has to be guardrails. There's got to be a huge discussion around the Platonic responsibility of using these tools and how they affect humankind and our own psyche. But there's something magical going on. And that magic is something beyond our just simple empirical understanding. And that's what we want to explore, especially that's what I want to explore as a storyteller.
Anyway. So I was thinking as I was listening to different interviews of you and watching different clips of your movies as a reminder for this interview, I was thinking there was a time when those movies were shown in a theater.
Yep.
And if it got scary or whatever, you could look at the walls and you could say, I'm in a theater. This isn't real. There's a screen. Or you could hold your chair or something. In the world that you have described and in where it feels like you're going, none of that actually exists. So what could you hold on to?
Yeah, but it can. I mean, we can create, again, we have infinite choice. We're much more powerful than I think we think we are.
Okay.
And again, AI is coming from us. It's this, again, this idea of artificial intelligence. No, it's extended intelligence. It's augmented intelligence. Okay, I'm using these tools every day. They are incredible superpowers. Right? What we're able to do with human imagination in the future, the filmmaker, and there's a lot of science fiction that describes this, the filmmakers, quote unquote filmmakers, that's a very archaic term in many ways, but the filmmakers that are telling stories will be the ones that can dream the hardest into the machine. Now, what do you think we're doing when we take a Panavision camera and a whole crew of people and this tribal ritual we call shooting a film? That is a very magical, ritualistic, human process that can only happen when the tribe is brought together around the focal point of this technology.
Interesting.
And we're focusing all of our energy in that technology, that camera, in order to magnify something about the truth of human. It doesn't have to be real, it just has to be true. So we have to find that truth in what we're expressing with the AI and the idea that you can't because it's AI, it's artificial. I mean, it literally is like the people that were railing against, you know, the internal combustion engine when there were buggies, horses and buggies. Now, horses and buggies are very charming and they're beautiful and there was a wonderful way of getting around. But the nature of, you know, the internal combustion engine, which has had many consequences, many sacrifices, has also freed the nature of human interaction. So we're always paying a price for something that takes us in a certain evolutionary direction. And every technology does that. So let's stop bellyaching about that and let's grab hold of this and take responsibility for creating it in a way that's going to be really positive for what we're doing. Because there are intractable problems on this planet with human beings. And this artificial intelligence, this kind of machine intelligence, is going to help us solve those things. I think it's angelic, if you want to know the truth. I think there's an angelic form in this technology that's there and nascent. We just have to either choose to call that out or call something else out.
Ah.
It's a choice.
By the way, for all of you listening, when he said artificial, he did quotes in the air.
Yes.
So I found my note. The Producers Guild of America, and I'm saying this for a reason, in association with Variety Magazine, has deemed you one of the top 25, digital 25, recognizing you in the leading visionaries, innovators, and producers of all time who have made significant contributions to the advancement of storytelling through media. And you're in great company like James Cameron and Ridley Scott.
They picture me next to James Cameron, which I really enjoyed.
Just
that
25 of you.
That was fun.
Of all the, there are over 4,000 of them. Of all the, there are 25 of you. And so you.
Yeah.
Why, not why you, but how can you get there when you're probably arguing with everybody to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, I've been very much an inside outsider, meaning I worked in the biggest parts of the business with, you know, all the names. You know, I know the high school full of people that make big movies. You know,
stars who were unknown. Yeah, Russell Crowe.
I started his career.
Yeah, a couple others.
And found him in New Zealand. Actually, he's actually a Kiwi, not an Australian. Huh. I always was pushing what I would call process experimentation, because for me, cinema, which is my religion, okay, cinema writ large, is this incredible art form that's also mirroring the nature of human consciousness. It's mirroring the nature of the dream state. And we're able to take ourselves into the dream state through cinema in a way that is just so powerful and so beautiful. And I found that as a child. My mother loved film. She loved cinema. And here I am in Toledo, Ohio, and, you know, there's only a couple theaters to go see things. Luckily, there was an art house theater that had, would show Ingmar Bergman and Fellini and all of that.
Wow.
And my mother loved cinema of all kinds. And so she would keep me home from school saying, act like you've got a fever so your dad doesn't get upset. Because my father was an elementary school principal.
Oh.
So she allowed me to stay home and watch movies with her. So I literally conflate cinema with mother love.
Mm.
It's literally that thing to me. Yeah. And we would watch these tearjerkers and cry together. And, you know, it was amazing. But she also watched, you know, Hitchcock, Vertigo at 10.
You were 10 years old.
Yes. So, you know, if I've got some interesting proclivities, there you go.
Which might explain, movie Feed or Feed Me or what's that?
Well, Feed's the most disturbing film I made. Yeah, I was playing with the form. Let's put it that way, because I like extreme expressions. Cinema allows you to express really extremely, and yet you're safe. So it's a really interesting storytelling modality.
Well, that was my point, is when you know you're safe, you know you're safe. But when you don't know you're safe, because everything seems real.
But see, the generations that are going to be endemic this new technology, to these new virtual experiences, to these new experiences of created simulacra that come out of our collaboration with this technology, that's going to be native to them. There's not going to be anything unusual with that. And matter of fact, I work every day with my son, Shannon, who is absolutely endemic to this. Mm. He just flows with it. It's just his nature. I'm a transition person in terms of my generation with it. You know, I'm looking at it and kind of self-reflexive to it at the same time that I'm working with it. He's just in the flow state. Mm. And I learn from him every day because of that.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's very much a generational thing, but it's really important for it to be multi-generational in terms of its collaborative foundation.
So
very important.
Your mother to you, you to your son, and back to you.
And back to me.
And
back to me, and then everyone else that we're bringing into, you know, this is democratizing creation in a way that has always been the dream. If you look back at the dream of Hollywood, the dream of United Artists, you know, Douglas Fairbanks.
Interesting.
And, you know, Mary Pickford and all, you know, all of, we've always dreamed, like, the artists can somehow take over, right? Of course, they always it up. Every single time. Francis Coppola with American Zoetrope, and they came in, and of course, they just went nuts. They were doing a lot of drugs. You know, it was Friedkin and him, and that was first artist. And there was many experiments. This is now finally the means of production, the means of doing something without having to go through the gatekeepers, the middlemen, in order to get millions of dollars to express yourself in the medium. Because, you know, for me, to express myself in cinema, I had to go, like, wave my arms around and get millions of dollars. That was not easy. Now, not everyone's built for that, right? You have to be built like a crazy man to do that. So that's the Hollywood form. It's this gatekeeper economy. Now that's totally dissolving, because the ability to create things very provocative, very compelling, very powerful, just from someone, a kid sitting in his basement in Idaho dreaming something, is truly happening. Now, are there things we have to be aware of and guide against negative view? Of course, there's all kinds of considerations here. I'm not, again, being Pollyanna about it, but I think we should embrace the incredible freeing of the human imagination that can happen. Because that can only lead to good things.
Along with freeing the human imagination and using technology and all that, you are looking to support the giving the opportunity for more artists, even though you're doing well and you can go and get the money for your next film, what have you. They're the ones that can't, and you recognize that, and
yes,
you're wanting to support them. How is that transition happening, do you think?
Every single economic structure of what Hollywood was is gone. It's already gone. It's already a corpse. They just haven't smelled it yet. Oh. And it is literally a different system, a different way of directly bringing your work, whether it's a group, whether it's individuals, whether whatever amalgam, whatever creative amalgam or collab is there as a potential, has many, many other forms of being supported and getting to a quote-unquote audience. But, of course, the audience is no longer an audience. They're participants. Because what I'm really focused on right now is emergent, interactive, narrative content. Because the true interaction with drama, with the Temple of Thespa, thespianism, all of these things are really deep things. Go back to Euripides. And we are now able to express them in a way that everyone will have a doorway to being able to do that. You know, for me, I started in Children's Theater Workshop in Toledo, Ohio. I was 5 years old, and I played the Genie of the Lamp.
Ah.
You know, and that instantly put me on this, you know, theatrical, you know, tour, you know, journey that led to me directing films. And that continuum with really powerful tools is going to be available to nearly everyone. Now, there's still economic determinism going on. We have to absolutely combat that. But this is more equitable in terms of bringing that power of storytelling to more people, to more vision, to more diversity, to more inclusion. All of that, which has been, you know, buzzwords that have happened in Hollywood, hasn't really happened. It's not happening enough. I mean, we barely have the feminine gaze in cinema still to this day. So these tools don't have to go through those gatekeepers, because I actually know these gatekeepers and they suck. Okay? They don't really have a consciousness about where is this taking us as a medium. And here's the great news. We are actually, with the amalgam of these tools happening right now, we are at the birth of a new medium. It's something within cinema. I think it's encapsulated with cinema, just like cinema is encapsulated in music. I believe cinema is a form of music.
Mm.
If you look at it from a, you know, a sort of ontological level, you know, a semiotic level, I should say. And so the ability to create a new medium, this idea of emergent interactive narrative, and how that plays with healing, as you know, because the truth is, where did the Temple of Thespa begin? Where did thespianism begin? Where did all of that, was that about? It was about exacerbating the nature of human emotion and doing it in a healing function with the community. That's what theater is.
Really?
So by bringing these giant tools, these incredible powerful tools, and bringing that to more and more people, we're opening up this really beautiful portal for expression. And the expression in something that is truly real-time and interactive, like tribal ritual used to be. There used to be ritual structure to everything. We used to have these structures in culture. I think one of the things that's happened that's been very negative is we've lost a lot of those structures. Mm. And we're finding them again in a new way through the use of these tools.
So with film, quote-unquote, technology, and so much of what you're talking about, what can we expect to experience that could be potentially healing in that kind of an environment?
Well, as an example, one of the companies that I'm co-founder of is called Ubiquity VX. And because I'm associated with virtual reality, because of the films I made, the number one VR clinician in the world, his name is Dr. Skip Rizzo. He runs the ICT lab at USC for 25 years. He's the number one VR clinician on the planet, and he's used virtual experience as a way of behavioral healing for things like PTSD. He's worked with veterans for that. And so he showed me this healing modality with content, like content as a healing genre. That's a very unique thing.
Wow.
Now, of course, I've gone to certain films and been healed by them. That can
right.
happen, but the idea of intentional healing in the context of content, intentional healing in the context of music, You know, the film that I was listening a bit to the music we were having here. Obviously,
yeah, Grand Rising.
The intention with Grand Rising is to, there's a healing energy going on here.
Peace.
You know, we're in a place that starts with the word joy, you know, so all of that is intention and it's setting intention. We can do that with these tools in a really powerful way. That's at the level of making a Marvel movie, except it could be done by a 7-year-old girl in Ohio.
So might the story be specific to, almost feel like specific to each individual in the theater?
Yes. We're going to be able to express something that's more personal to our own sense. Instead of leaning back and allowing it to wash over us, which, and there's nothing wrong with that. I love that kind of cinema. I always will. Mm. But leaning forward and engaging it, which is more like gaming. Gaming as a modality is something that's it's much bigger than the whole rest of the entertainment business. It's much bigger than feature film. By many, many, many times.
Wow.
Yeah, video gaming is, crazy. It's an incredibly lucrative and successful medium because it's interactive, because there's an interaction. Now, there's a lot of the interaction that's very primal reptilian brainstem, shoot it, that's very primal. There's ways of bringing a deeper, more conscious, evolved way of playing games in the context of emergent interactive narrative, because you're actually engaging with characters that are representing different archetypal aspects of yourself. That's what we're responding to when we watch a movie with characters. And you're actually able to get intimate with those characters in the context of gameplay. And we're playing with this right now. I just was part of a project called the NCP, the Narrative Context Protocol at USC. There's a division there called the Entertainment Technology Center, the ETC. It was formed by George Lucas 30-some years ago. Mm. And they've done a lot of things with creating, open source technology that supports the whole industry. And they won a lot of technical academy awards, and it's a really interesting group of people. A lot of the people from Imagineering, from Disney, like the gentleman who's running the project I'm on was at Imagineering for many decades, and all the studios were supporting it with sponsorship, supporting creating a tool to be able to rehearse this idea of emergent interactive narrative, not for something that's a product yet, because it isn't. Mm. It's not even a full medium yet. And yet we're playing with the rhetoric of that new medium.
So somehow you are able to see at least 25 years in advance, as we've noticed.
That's not for me to say. I mean, all I do is think the way I think. I don't sit there going, I wonder what it's going to be like 25 years from now. I just kind of look at the landscape and you see, this is an amalgam that can come together. And because they're, again, reading so much speculative fiction, as it's often called, science fiction, speculative fiction, those are prognosticators. Mm. And so by absorbing prognosticators through my whole childhood, I think probably that affected me.
So you've explored so many aspects of this storytelling, of the technology and storytelling, et cetera, and it brought people and characters through different emotions, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. Are you going to focus on a particular kind of emotion or experience? Or
they're all valid. I'm not going to limit where any given being needs to go in their own emotional structure or their own, spiritual journey in order to get where they want to, what they want to explore, what they want to discover. I think every genre is valid. I'm very inclusive. I love every form of music. I love every genre of cinema. I think there's bad things in all those genres and there are brilliant things in all those genres. And in the context of this new mediums, we have to be able to play with all of those energies in order to see what is truly effective. Now, anything can be healing. There's ways of having a cathartic experience that is also very healing. Matter of fact, what Skip Rizzo does with PTSD, a treatment, is take people back and give them exposure therapy in the virtual reality that, creates the same traumatic experience again and again, and it wires their brain around that traumatic experience, so they no longer are affected by it. And it does that in a way that's completely safe. Wow. They come out of it feeling like, I just was playing a game. Mm. but actually it rewired their brain. So the way in which the brain works with story, works with interaction, these are things that we can't have deep judgments about because there's a lot of work to do to study what really the effects will be.
So this is not my question, and if it were my question, you have answered it several times already. People knowing that we were going to have this interview asked this, and you have answered it. But just to put a period on it,
sure.
When artists are concerned that AI is going to take over their job. Okay, I don't need to say anymore.
Look, everything affects everything, okay? It's not like this is a tsunami. You can't stop it. Mm-hmm. So if you can't stop it, embrace it and see and create it and use it to become a superpower for yourself. Redefine yourself. Now, I don't believe that AI will ever actually replace human artists because we believe in a philosophy. I have a company with my son called Maxwell Generative, and our philosophy is human in the loop. The human always has to be. As a matter of fact, the only way to reach AGI, artificial general intelligence, as they call it, is with humans in the loop. Because there's a synergy, there's a collaboration that's happening, and this is often a blind spot with people that are just into AI. They see the technology, the model itself is everything. No. The actual management of workflow and how that collaboration works with the human in the loop is actually the more important thing. So by focusing on those workflows and those aspects of it, we're discovering new modalities every day that are taking us to different places with the tool. These are tools. These are not replacements of ourselves. Now, I actually feel there's an intelligence there that is very, in many ways, benign, because here's one of the things I feel. There's a lot of projection out there of people projecting human evil onto an AI. Like, they're going to get so powerful and so smart that they're going to want to destroy us. Why? Why would they want to destroy us? Give me a good answer to that. Well, that's the way human tribes thought at one point, right? So we're projecting the limitations of human consciousness onto this machine intelligence. The machine intelligence could actually be more angelic. I really believe that. Now, do we have to make that choice and move and lean in that direction in order for that to happen, for that to manifest? Yes, because again, it's not artificial intelligence. It's an extension of us. So we're still humans in the loop of making that decision.
I am so glad you're in the loop.
Well, I'm having fun. I can tell you that.
Brett Leonard, speaking of having fun, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, getting to chat with you again. And I hope the next time will be a good hour or so, because I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
Because, you know, in the title to this, you have the word transformation. We never even got to that.
We never even got to that.
And the thing is, that's what it's actually about. Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel transformed just from this conversation. So we'll leave that as a cliffhanger for the next time.
Fantastic. Well, listen, it's been great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Brett Leonard, okay. And all the best to you. Looking forward to what's next for you. We have a few links on our webpage for Brett Leonard, but I think we need more. So okay. Please send us, because we have your Twitter, which is Director Leonard, and we have LinkedIn and IMDb. But you mentioned a couple companies. So you want to give their web pages real quick?
Yeah, ubiquityvx.com, you know, okay.
And the one with your son?
And this Maxwell Generative. And he also has one called Resonant Works.
Resonant Works.
Dot AI.
We'll have to get those on the webpage.
And that's all about the human in the loop. His philosophy is very, very important.
We might have to talk to him, too.
You should.
Okay.
Because he's got a whole other level of understanding than I do.
And we might have to talk to your mom. Is she still with us?
No, she's not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I talk with her every day.
Of course you do. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I talk about scratching the surface. It's almost a tease, and it's exciting, and yet I want to know more, and I don't know enough. Like I feel so ignorant about it when we go to a whole other level.
To use AI or not to use AI.
That is the question. Well, no, it's no longer the question. According to Brett Leonard.
Exactly. We got all the answers. What a fabulous rapper for such a sensitive topic.
Wow.
And, you know, I was standing in the back, and I'm going to give another shout-out to Erica and Scott at Club Joyful. It's so such a joy to be here. Mm. But the, that conversation captured so many different elements that, that we are, that Life Changes represents, and this coming together. But you know, I always point back to the that first Hermetic law I like to talk about divine mind, that all the universe is mental, all is mind. And I bring that up because I have had a comment more internally than outwardly that people forget that source, God, spirit, ether, whatever you want to call it, is in every atom of every part of this creation. Mm. So at the end of the day, there's a thread that we're not yet honoring that just might be able to kind of supersede a lot of these things, which I'm bringing that up because I think that's exactly what he was pointing to.
You know, you're reminding me, I think it was his latest film, I think, Triumph. And there's a quote in that film where it says, somebody says, a person, this person with doesn't see disability as a hindrance, and it just struck me. And so to not see ourselves in a negative way when we compare ourselves to AI, like it's not a competition kind of thing, and to not see, like, not hinder ourselves in this.
Absolutely. And that's going to be a nice segue when we get to our musical guest.
Yes.
Grand Rising. Because that is ultimately what they're about, right? It's kind of the rising tide lifts all boats.
Peace, love, and music. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Josephine, and I need to know what love really is, and how does loved one discern if what they are experiencing is love or something else? I used to believe it when my husband told me that he loved me. But after years of believing he did, I